This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. More bad news for the GOP and the country on the corruption front yesterday. Republican Congressman Randy Cunningham of California pled guilty to charges of taking $2.4 million in bribes to help rig defense contracts. Cash, antiques, vacations, a yacht, his daughter's graduation party, all on the take. And Cunningham is just a sideshow in Washington's corruption woes these days. The big-time scandal revolves around lobbyist Jack Abramoff and charges that under George W. Bush and the Republican majority, lobbying has crossed a line into straight-up bribery for votes. Defenders say this is the criminalization of politics, but it sure looks bad. Up next on Point, corruption fever in Republican Washington. Joining me now from Washington is James Grimaldi. He's an investigative reporter for The Washington Post and has, with his colleague Susan Schmidt, been way out ahead on this story. James Grimaldi, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's quite a big mural. It's hard to take it all in. It's hard to keep up with all the details. I wish you'd sort of lay out the basic, where things stand right now, the indictments, the investigations underway, and then we'll get to the sort of front edge that you've been pursuing. But what's the kind of base of this pyramid that's already laid down, James?
Well, maybe I ought to tell you a little bit about Jack Abramoff, because the story really does begin with him.
Mm-hmm.
As you pointed out, he became a very powerful lobbyist in Washington, connected to the Republicans, with a very colorful past. He'd been a college Republican, friend of Ralph Reed, former Christian Coalition director, movie producer, came to Washington in the 1995 Republican takeover, and quickly built a massive lobbying empire. And in the late 90s, he began wooing a half dozen or so Indian tribes to represent them for tens of millions of dollars. And it was sort of it was around that this investigation now revolves. The first major break in the case probably was this guilty plea from Michael Scanlon, his business partner,
mm-hmm.
who pled guilty to defrauding the Indian tribes, and probably more significantly, pled guilty to conspiring to bribe lawmakers.
So there we've got sort of nut of it, and then the tentacles and allegations begin to go out to, well, all over the place. Just describe what's known or charged in this web.
Well, I think the main member of Congress who seems to be at the forefront now is Congressman Bob Ney, who is the chairman of the House Administration Committee, known as the mayor of Capitol Hill in Washington, pretty powerful position. And according to the plea agreement that Mr. Scanlon signed, he was a recipient of gifts, meals, a lavish trip, golf trip to Scotland where he golfed at St. Andrews. And in exchange for that, so the allegation goes, he did three separate things for Mr. Abramoff and his clients. One, he helped or he promised to pass legislation to reopen a Texas Indian casino.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, he helped advance the purchase of this fleet of gambling boats in Florida known as Sun Cruise. And third, he helped, or he actually awarded a contract to an Israeli telecommunications firm that installed antennas in the House office buildings for cell phones. Mr. Ney, of course, his defense, I should point out, is that, yes, he received, some meals and some gifts and some favors, but all of those activities were not in exchange for any official actions.
And that, of course, is the bright line argument, and we'll look at that. James, we've got, you write, 35 to 40 investigators and prosecutors on the Abramoff case now. They've been very busy, and you write that they are targeting more and more people. Who's being looked into here? It's not just, I mean, how many congressmen? And it's congressmen's wives also, and it's executive branch? Tell us.
Well, yes, that's correct. We've talked about Congress, and among those who seem to be at least being looked at this point include Congressman Ney, as well as Tom DeLay, the former House Majority Leader. There's also a congressman from California, John Doolittle, whose wife was hired by Mr. Aberboff to do a fundraiser. Mrs. DeLay was hired also for a particular project by the Alexander Strategy Group, which was run by two former Tom DeLay aides. And the allegations that are being looked into by the Justice Department are that these congressional wives may have been hired as a way of getting money to the members of Congress. Now, of course, each of these wives, the spouses say that they were performing activities that were, and they were remunerated for their work, and that they were charging a regular rate. I think the question really is going to revolve around what kind of evidence the Justice Department has. And right now they have a pretty powerful witness, I think, in Michael Scanlon, who even at his plea agreement was correcting his the charging papers with the Justice Department. I think he could prove to be a very formidable witness. And I think he is one that members of Congress and other staff members are probably quite concerned about. The other thing that would be in the possession of the Justice Department would be millions, perhaps, but probably more in the lines of hundreds of thousands of emails, at least thousands of emails that Jack Aberboff wrote. He was a prolific email writer. And a lot of the assertions in the government's charging papers to date are outlined in those emails, most likely.
Those if important you look at, because they could get to the quid pro quo if there was a quo in this relationship, as could his former partner Michael Scanlon's testimony.
That's right. I think the combination of the two will be very powerful, because if you have an email, I suppose you could explain it away and say, well, that's not really what it says. And if you have a witness, you could always attack the witness credibility. But if you have a witness who can guide a jury through the emails and say, yes, that's what they say and that's what they mean, and it was a quid pro quo, then what you have is a potentially powerful case. And I think what you might end up saying next are other cooperating witnesses. I think this is building to be a classic criminal investigation by prosecutors, where they try to get cooperating witnesses along the way until they're able to go after their main targets, which would, in this case, for a prosecutor, be a lawmaker.
James Grimaldi, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation also from Washington, Karen Tumulty. She's national political correspondent for Time magazine. Karen, thanks for being with us.
And thank you, Tom.
We hear George Will, conservative columnist, on the one hand critical, saying this stuff is an example of the Republicans having gone native with an unseemly exuberance. It's called K Street conservatism, he says. But George Will says at the same time we shouldn't criminalize politics. Is this just politics, Karen, or is this bribery? Where's the line between lobbying and bribery?
Well, I think that that is one of the things that we are going to see the Justice Department itself try to explore in this case. And one of the things that were that was in these charging papers last week that immediately got everyone's attention here in Washington is that one of the things that the department is alleging were given to Congressman Ney in return for which he performed these official acts were campaign contributions. Well, campaign contributions are traditionally something that the Justice Department has stayed away from.
Everybody gets them, and they get them from all kinds of sources.
Exactly. And I think a lot of lawmakers have thought that, well, if you take this money and if you're within the limits of the law and the amount you accept, if you report them as you are required to do quarterly under the law, then that's going to be okay.
And suddenly it seems as though perhaps it's not okay. Is there a new dynamic here, Karen Tumulty? Is there a Republican money machine doing something different than what's been done before?
Well, a couple of things are going on. One is that there is more money in politics, not just on the Republican side, but on both sides than we have ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, public interest groups have for decades said that campaign contributions amount to bribery, that they are a legalized form of bribery. I think that, as James suggested, what you have never had before in the era before email were a documentary trail that could make that link.
Right now, Bill Allison joins us from Washington, D.C. He's editor-at-large at the Center for Public Integrity. Bill, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Bill, there's been money in Washington for a long time. There were scandals when the Democrats had control of Congress. Is there something new going on here?
I think what's different about and what we've seen over the last few years is the extent to which, you know, Republicans have really made K Street part of the strategy for governing and bringing in the extent to which they've brought in lobbyists. You know, Tom DeLay's number two in the House leadership, Roy Blunt, has regular meetings with lobbyists. And when they want to pass legislation, rather than rely on, you know, using other members and you know, the old, trading game that somebody wants a road named after him or needs a bridge built in his town. Instead, they get, you know, members of the trade groups and the lobby associations to work members. And that's really the way that, you know, that they've been able to enforce discipline and have been able to, you know, pass legislation. And they've involved K Street to an extent that we really haven't seen before.
So what are you saying, that Congress, Capitol Hill itself, becomes the facade, the kind of Potemkin village, and the real work gets done in the Money Gulch over on K Street, it's outsourced to the money men?
Well, you know, it almost seems like, you know, Congress and the executive branch are almost a finishing school for which you get your experience to go on to your lucrative career in K Street with a number of people going through the revolving door. But, you know, there is a tremendous amount. You know, everybody in town knows that lobbyists end up writing a lot of legislation or having a major impact on legislation, the way bills are written. You know, there's been examples of this. There's been even, one document. It was a Microsoft Word version that was floating around Capitol Hill of an energy bill that when you check the track changes, you could see that Southern Company's lobbyists had rewritten, you know, portions of the bill to their liking. You know, I think that, you know, the decision-making process, you know, it's not necessarily inside of Congress and inside the staff. It's, you know, that lobbyists do have a tremendous impact on the way that legislation is made and policy is made.
So a kind of outsourcing of the basic work here, and it's raising eyebrows. On the other hand, there's been a lot of money there for a long time. I want to get some more perspectives on this. Joining us right now from New York is Mort Zuckerman. He's chairman and editor-in-chief of U.S. News and World Report, also publisher of the New York Daily News. No liberal he, but has been very critical of the environment emerging in the Bush years in Washington. Mort Zuckerman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
You have written about Tom DeLay, I guess along with others, transforming, in your words, the lobbying world into a Republican money machine. What exactly do you mean by that, Mort Zuckerman, and is it something new?
Well, I think as was suggested before, it is something new in the sense that the role of the lobbyists and the role of Republicans within those lobbying firms has been transformed. The Republicans in the House have basically said to the lobbying firms, you better work with the Republicans or else we're not going to work with you. And it goes not just at the national level, but it goes to some of the people who work at the state levels as well. And they have been brilliantly successful at this, both in terms of fundraising and in terms of political leverage. So they've changed it's almost like another branch of the government at this stage of the game. The number of lobbyists in Washington has basically doubled up to 35,000 in the 5 years of the Bush presidency. It's not what I would call a draining the swamp.
Which was President Bush's promise as candidate Bush.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that Bush, in a sense, has done this, but he has certainly accepted it. It was something that was initiated, I think, primarily by DeLay, in part because it gave him a tremendous amount of fundraising to use to, in a sense, manage the House Republicans, which he did extraordinarily well.
And the Abramoff case, I mean, it almost looks from the outside, we're trying to figure out what to make of this, that he tapped into these tens and tens of millions of money in the Indian casino business, which, of course, is huge, and then funneled it off to all kinds of Republicans. You've got Grover Norquist in here and Ralph Reed in here, and through related companies and lobbying firms, all kinds of connections. I mean, is that, in your view, Mort Zuckerman, the central joint in this whole scene?
Well, it is certainly one of the key joints, bearing in mind that Grover Norquist had his former partner, this guy David Safavian, who became the chief procurement officer in charge of spending around $300 billion, and he's now been indicted for obstruction of justice by lying about his mentor, Jack Abramoff, you know, the guy with all this access to the Republican power brokers. So I think you have a web that is now being fleshed out, and a sense of a culture of corruption. Now, it is true that they're going to try and draw this line between old political contributions and legislation. But I tell you, I don't think the public's going to buy into it. They're going to see this as a quid pro quo. And you now have, with Michael Scanlon basically turning evidence against clearly some congressman and Abramoff. You have now the opportunity for one of the great scandals of Washington.
Mort Zuckerman, what happened to the cleaning it up public Republican impulse here? Is there a culture of corruption? That's what the Democrats are charging now.
Yeah, and I think as somebody else wrote, I mean, the Republicans came to Washington to do good, and they ended up doing well. I mean, I think they got caught up in all the possibilities of Washington, in part because some of them wanted political power, and in part because everybody realized, you know, this is really a big money pot. Now, let me just say, I do think in terms of the response to it, I think these kinds of cases that Michael Scanlon is now going to open up in a way that we never anticipated, those should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. I think there has to be some public outcry, and I think there will, as Karen said before, that I think will contribute to this, particularly the idea of rewarding those lobbyists with various benefits and punishing who are Republicans and support the Republicans financially and otherwise, and punishing others. For example, I believe that Dan Glickman of the Motion Picture Association, the motion picture industry, because he's a Democrat, has just been clobbered by various tax and other things that are coming out of Washington as a way of warning people, do not hire a Democrat as a chief lobbyist for this or that organization. I think that's outrageous. And finally, there is one good fundamental trend that I think is going to help, and that is something like 50% of all campaign contributions in the 2004 campaign came through the Internet, and these were smaller contributions and give people a degree of independence from some of the big money that basically in one form or another, whether it's access or direct quid pro quos, are basically demanding a quid pro quo.
Mort Zuckerman, Chairman, Editor-in-Chief at U.S. News and World Report, it's great to have you with us. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Karen Tumulty, I know we've just got you for another half minute here. Do you think that the Department of Justice can draw a new line or a bright line between lobbying and bribery without busting up the current system, corrupt as it may be?
I think that they, again, what really sort of got everybody's attention last week in these filings was the sheer ambition of it, the scope of it, and the fact that Michael Scanlon's lawyer has said to us, has said to the Washington Post, you know, our cooperation with this investigation and this investigation itself is far, far broader and deeper than even these papers might suggest. So I do think it could maybe not bust it up, but certainly change it significantly.
While the Justice Department presses ahead with its investigation, the Senate Indian Affairs Committee has been conducting its own into Jack Abramoff's lobbying on behalf of several Native American tribes. 2 weeks ago, the committee called one Italia Federici to testify. She heads a Republican environmental group. She's a close friend of Abramoff's and a close friend of former Deputy Interior Secretary J. Stephen Griles. And a long trail of emails from Abramoff at least suggests she was soliciting favors from Griles to Abramoff. Senators John McCain, Republican Arizona, and Byron Dorgan, Democrat North Dakota, grilled her for about an hour. But Ms. Federici proved a combative witness. Senator Dorgan was at his wit's ends. Let's listen.
We've been through hours and hours and hours and hours of hearings. And it's pretty clear that this is one of the most disgusting tales of greed and avarice, of perhaps fraud, stealing. I mean, it's unbelievable what we have uncovered here. It's almost sickening. And you come to our table and say, you know, gosh, this was just about friendships. Hundreds of thousands of dollars came to my way and I didn't really do much. I mean, somehow none of this adds up.
One note, news reports say today that Senator Dorgan, who you heard right there, himself received a $5,000 contribution from an Indian tribe doing business with Abramoff. It is a thick stew. I want to turn to Cody, Wyoming. Alan Simpson joins us. He's former senator from Wyoming. He's honorary chair of Americans for Campaign Reform. It's a nonpartisan grassroots organization, self-described, committed to federal funding of election campaigns. Senator Simpson, thank you very much for being with us.
It is a delight. High blue skies where you can actually clear your head out here in Cody, Wyoming. And it's fascinating to me to hear the great uploading and downloading on Republicans. Let me tell you, I've watched all this stuff. When I was a state legislator, I tried to pass disclosure laws. Oh, no, no, you don't do that. We trust each other. We're a small state. We know each other. We know our businesses and so on. I never believed any of that. And, of course, now I'm in a situation with Bill Bradley and this fine bunch where I don't know where we're going, but there has to be some alternative, and I'll get a rich ration of crapple from Republicans to even think of any kind of, quote, federal funding, but there's some lawsuits going on in Vermont, and we'll see where it goes.
Alan Simpson, let us take advantage of that high blue sky and clear air out there, though. At the same time, people are pretty unhappy about what they're seeing in these cases, and we see the Justice Department now wading in to maybe draw a line, a new line, between lobbying and bribery. Do you think this is appropriate work for the Department of Justice, or should this be resolved by Americans voting people out of office?
Well, I think anyway, load every barrel, you know, fire cannons from the Justice, fire a blast from the American public. Everybody ought to get in the game. Take part or get taken apart. But this is not a blurry line. This is a clear line between bribery and lobbying. And people understand it. The good ones understand it completely. This is a case of people who babbled on about virtue and family values, except a little stealing and laundering and pandering, and selling out might not be in that. But I loved what Abe Lincoln said. He said, all men can face adversity, something paraphrasing here, but their true character comes out is how they handle power.
And we've got to go with that. Former Senator Alan Simpson in Wyoming, thank you for being with us. Bill Allison at the Center for Public Integrity, James Grimaldi with The Washington Post. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.